is Richard Roth, and this is The Passage. My guest today is Sasha Chermayeff, an artist and yoga teacher who lives in Catskill and has for the last 20 years or so, and I will let her speak for herself. Here's a big hit from the year Sasha was born by Bill Haley and the Comets, Skokian. I am here with Sasha Chermayeff, the artist and yoga teacher. Welcome.
Thank you.
Now, how, I don't know just where to start. Where, when did you begin to be an artist? Or you were sort of those, one of those people who sort of always was?
Yeah, I think that's the case with me. I felt when I was pretty young that this was something that I loved doing. I do have a very creative, artistic family. I have
right. I know your father is very well known a graphic designer.
Yeah, my dad's a graphic designer, and he's the well known one. But there's my mother is an artist. She's a painter, and she started very late in life after I did. But she's got her own thing. Her mother was also very talented at beautiful watercolors when she was very young, and then she went on to be an interior decorator who did all kinds of things. She was a master marbler. She painted on glass. So I have this creative family, and it was so painting was supported.
Did you grow up in Manhattan?
I did. I grew up right in the city, and I went to school there until I was a teenager, and then I went to boarding school for 11th and 12th grade. So I was an inner city kid, and then I became a country person.
Where did you go to boarding school?
I went to Phillips Academy in Andover, Mass.
And then from there you went to college, I think also in New England.
I went to University of Vermont in Burlington, Vermont. And that was where I got, well, I can't say it was the first time because I had some very good teachers early on. I had a great teacher when I was in high school in New York, which was progressive. I loved drawing from life, and so I was allowed to go into the high school life drawing class. I was mature enough to handle nudity So I got to do life drawing starting in eighth grade. So I had a lot of kind of unusually advanced training even when I was young. The Dalton School, where I went to school in the city from kindergarten through 10th grade. That was Aaron Curzon, and he was a great teacher. He got me drawing from the model. He got me drawing from plaster casts. He taught me how to really create volumetric drawing.
And that was beginning in eighth grade.
Yeah.
Right.
So by the time I was 16, I was a pretty good draftsman. I'm not the natural talent, hugely naturally talented person who can render, and, you know, I'm not like that. But I had a lot of very strong teachers who had strong concepts that helped me develop early. And I had my background. I was always going to museums. I was more or less dragged around to museums my whole childhood. And, of course, that sinks in and becomes an important part of who you are.
Did you have favorite artists as a child?
Yes, I did. My favorite artists as a child were the Fauvist painters. As you can, you know, imagine, I'm a colorist. Now I consider my main interest in terms of my painting color. And it started out that way. I loved Duran and Matisse, and I've moved through. It's not the most important painting to me now, but I still really care for that painting. Red Studio, which was in the Museum of Modern Art, was my favorite painting as a child. I wanted to go and see that if I had to be dragged to the Museum of Modern Art.
And when did you start painting? Now you paint kind of figurative expressionism and also abstract painting.
Yeah, I do. I painted, I guess what happened, it was sort of in the beginning, I said I was drawing from life and doing a lot of charcoal drawing. And then I went, when I was in boarding school, I was trying all different things. I did ceramics and silkscreen art and other forms of printing, etching, drawings. Etching and drawing with like fine point, that kind of stuff, engraving. And then when I went to University of Vermont, I ran into Frank Hewitt. He's no longer living, but he was my teacher there. And he was a really wonderful man who was a conceptual minimalist. So it was my first time taking on somebody with that kind of thinking. And he, classic Vermont guy, he painted his paintings with the dirt from the property that he lived on, and he would find the different corners of his property and dig it up, and he would get these different browns. It was like Ad Reinhardt meets brown. And he was earth-shaking for a couple of years there.
Was he the part of the reason why you went to school there?
No. I had no idea what I was doing when I went to school. I just went wherever I thought I could. I didn't want to go back to the city. And coming out of Andover is not easy, Phillips Academy, because it's a very high, you may know, but it's a super competitive old school. It's a conveyor belt for the Ivy Leagues. So if you're exactly student number 200 in a class of 400, which I was, I just had to see where I could get in, because one through, you know, basically it's as I said, people are pushing for the hardcore thing, and I was just, where am I going to go where I'm going to be happy? And I ended up in Vermont because it was a beautiful campus, and I liked the guy who interviewed me, and that was that.
And you'd had apparently a very extensive kind of art department at Andover.
Yeah. All the crazy people at Andover were in the art department, luckily. So, of course, I gravitated there. All the supposedly abnormal people, the ones who aren't, you know. Because, again, Andover has that super hardcore academic side to it. But there was really interesting people. I mean, Mr. Lloyd, who I learned about, you know, tensegrity structures, he was kind of a crossover mathematician artist. He was very good. I loved the ceramic teacher there, Audrey Bensley. She was great. And also my printmaking teacher there, I really liked. And then I was scared of the painting department there because they were so, it was very pushing a lot of realism. I think it was the era of, you know, Richard Estes being at the height of his, you know, and photorealism was what people wanted, and it was just the last thing that I wanted. You know, I wanted to be Van Gogh. And as you can see from my painting now, that's where I kind of ended up in a way. But so that was important then, and then important in college, different things developing all along.
Then once you got out of college, you started traveling?
Well, I traveled during college because I lived in France for a year for my junior year. And I went to the art school in Paris, and that was the Beaux-Arts, the old the École Nationale Supérieure des Beaux-Arts. And I got to go there just by showing up and doing a drawing test. That's what they do. You have to go in, and it's almost like it's almost like an amphitheater. And the model's down in the center, and you have to draw all day. And they come around, and it's very vague, and people sort of look at you and decide this and decide that. And then one guy just came up to me. He said, "Okay, you can be in my atelier." So then I went, and I started going Atelier Maté. He had a lot of foreign people and a very mixed group, some abstract painters, some really talented German Germans who did sort of German expressionist style painting, and some guys who from Argentina. So it was like, I think I kind of got thrown in there with all the foreigners, and that was also a really good experience, I have to say.
There, I suppose you were also going to all sorts of wonderful museums.
Constantly. You know, I made a mission out of that. I really went to every museum in Paris, which you need a year to do because there's so many. There are just so many great museums, and there's so many museums where there's no one really there, and you can spend hours going through stuff, and there's a lot of places where you have more access than the major museums to things. You can get into handling things even in certain museums. And it's just, you know, the home of the French landscape painters was, you know, the 19th century, those painters, the Cézanne, Van Gogh, those painters became like the most important, you know, at that point. I was Frank, my teacher in Vermont, when I got back, he was like, "What did you do?" I was like, he was hoping I was going to go continue down my kind of more minimal track, and I came back with all this color and all these paintings that were back to Cézanne, I never really returned to a kind of more minimal thing. Although I have to say, it's been important, even though my work is not, you couldn't say it was minimal. It's minimal in certain ways. I've simplified, I've been very consciously simplifying my process for 20 years straight.
I think that's fairly easy to see from your abstract painting especially.
Yeah, you can tell because it's only a few colors at a time, really. I've gotten to that point.
Now, this was about 1980, I suppose.
Yeah, early 80s when I finished college. And then I wasn't done. I kept going. I went back and I went to the New York Studio School of Drawing and Painting and Sculpture in New York. So I did that for a few years after college. It wasn't now it's a master's degree school, but in those days it wasn't. And that was where I really worked, like as much as I could have possibly worked. You know, it's you work in 8 o'clock in the morning until, you know, midnight every day. Just, I met my husband, Philip Howie, there. He was a sculptor in the sculpture department, and a lot of my closest friends moved through there. There's a lot of us up here in Columbia County and Greene County now.
What brought you up here?
Well, I was living in New York. It was my husband and I had gone to school. We'd met in school, and then we were living and working in the city, and then we lived in Mexico. We did that for a couple of years. And when we got back, we were, you know, trying to rent an apartment, trying to rent studios, and we both had part-time jobs, and it's just like we were thinking, what are we doing? We're going to spend every cent we make trying to rent. And then it occurred to us we could maybe try to find a place, since we both worked part-time, where we could spend some days out of the city. And sure enough, Claude Caron, who's also a local artist, I don't know if you know Claude.
He shows at
John Davis Gallery. And his father, Nick, was a teacher of all of us in the New York Studio School, the drawing teacher. So we were, Claude, who I had known since those days, and, you know, so it's been about 10 years, I guess, that we'd known his father at that point. He had bought his house in Claverack, and he was like, oh, come up and you can stay with me and you look around up here. So we did. We came up, we stayed with Claude, we looked at different places around, and then we ended up in Greene County, just across the river in Catskill, just because back then, which was the early 90s, you know, it was a little more affordable than Columbia County. So we bought our house, and we've been there now. It'll be 20 years this summer.
And you're in the village and kind of on the river, I think, right?
Yeah, we're not in the village. No, we're outside of the village, about a mile. And we're right on the Cotterskill and Catskill Creek, where they come together. So it's incredibly, it's just monumentally beautiful and changing all of the time. Every season changes the shape of the curve of the bend in the river. So not only do I have my beautiful, my own personal Mont Saint-Victoire in the form of a river, I have this river that never looks the same. It never looks the same from season to season. It's very different in the summer to the fall to the winter, and then the following spring after the high waters, it'll take on a new shape. It's pretty staggering.
So you paint there?
So I paint there, yes, all the time. A lot of paintings of that river, which you will see soon. I'm going to show them in the fall with Bruce at BCB.
Oh, you are?
Uh-huh. Yeah. Uh-huh. In September, I'm going to show 20 landscape paintings from the last few years.
And what size paintings are those?
They're all pretty small. They're all ranging, say, 12 to 15 inches or something like that. And those are they're small because I go out there and I stand there and I make the painting. And I don't work on them later.
Oh, you finish it?
I finish it standing out there.
I see.
Yeah.
You use oil colors?
I use oil paint. Yes, I do. It's not, you know, this is an ongoing argument I have with all my artist friends, because it's, you know, it's, I don't develop them and tweak them and correct them and finish them and work on them and make them. You know, I don't do that. I used to do that, but I don't do that anymore. Now I go out and I paint while I'm standing there in the moment, having the experience. And when I'm done, that's it. I mean, I have done that. I did one in, like, for 2 years running, a larger landscape that I did. Which actually is on loan. It's in Chatham right now at Thompson Giroux Gallery. But it's just up to show. But I worked on that in the fall, and then I had to wait. It was too big for me to do in one season. And I had to, you know, you have to wait. Like Monet, I would wait for the day that would look like a similar day and then go back out and then wait for another kind of similar day, similar time of day, because those things really, when you are, you know, when you're looking at nature, it's very, everything changes so rapidly anyway. I mean, think of it, the sky, the shadows, the clouds, whatever. It's just a constant flow, and you're looking at water, which is never still. There's no stillness to be had. So you're always formulating your ideas and trying to make it whole while everything's moving around you. And I did that for 2 seasons in a row, and that was a major achievement for me. I finished it. But these paintings, the ones that I'm going to have down at BCB, are all done right there. And some, you know, sometimes it's just, it happens. Sometimes.
Do you make a lot of paintings?
Yeah, I probably make like 25 or so every year, something like that. 20, 25. I don't know if that's a lot. I paint a lot of, and that's just the one, the oil painting that I do outside. I also work in my studio in the winter. Most of the winter, I work on my abstract paintings because it's too cold. So I go out in the winter. I love painting outside in the winter if I can get a balmy day, you know, which we've had in the past few years. There's been a few days where I could go out and stand there in the snow and be warm enough to actually finish a whole picture. But most of the time in the winter, I start getting involved in my paper, my work on paper, because my abstract work is all on paper now. What I usually do is I start to get a very strong idea for weeks. It could be weeks of, like, the color that I want. Because it's so subtle when you mix color your whole life. And the thing is that the oil painting is a place where there's infinity, right? The color, you have your palette, you have many colors laid out, and then it's an infinite situation, a little of this, a little of that, and you can become, you're the alchemist who creates like any number of palettes. And so I start to see these beautiful, strong like relationships that I want to then accentuate. And when I get that idea in my mind, like, oh, I want to have this yellow, but it's kind of a lemony yellow, and I want the red, but I want it to be a little bit of a coral. And then, you know, I sort of formulate how that would look, what would happen if I put the yellow down first, what would happen if I put the yellow on top, and I start to, and then when I really get there, I mix the color, and that takes me a while because I got to mix a lot of it to do my paintings because they're larger and they need big pieces of color at one time. So I mix the color, and then I see it. I can actually see the color. And then I'm like, okay. And then I just, it's just, it's like, do it.
Just and at that point, you've sort of designed the painting?
At that point, I just make it up as I go along. Uh-huh. Just let it happen. Just let it rip. Because I draw and paint in my painting all the time. I mean, I don't worry about... The great thing about abstract painting is I don't have to really, you know, involve myself in the content of, the subject matter. It's not about that. It's going to take on shapes and it'll take on forms. But really what's going to happen is the color is going to have a kind of resonance and a vibration at the end. And the shapes, whatever, that I just let that happen spontaneously. It's kind of like an organized accident, you know, where I set up the situation as much as I can by mixing the color. I decide what, you know, how wide, what's this, how big the paper, what's the form. And then I just let it happen with a lot of speed, a lot of freedom. When I'm painting outside in the landscape, no, that color I mix right there, just mixing the oil paint and then laying in color next to color, just like the way it was done when in the very beginning when that kind of impasto painting was first came to being. Because for so many years, as you know, painting wasn't created like that. It wasn't really just laid in. It was done in layers and glazes, and you had to think, what will this color be next to this color after I paint this layer on top of this layer? No, and then you have the revolution of the modern painters, you know, Manet starting and everybody. There's earlier masters who did it, Goya, but where the paint is mixed and you lay it in color next to color and then you see what happens right in front of you. You see the space that's created between, because of course, one color next to another color, something happens. One tends to be, you know, feel like it's more forward or whatever it is. And so I mix it right there and I do it. And I can't really do it if I'm not looking at nature anymore. I don't try to do things like paint a landscape from my imagination or something. I just don't bother because it's too complicated to really come up with a very whole palette with just a human brain. I don't know how people do it. I just think it's beyond our capacity. And when I look at landscape painting, very few people do it. They don't work with color. They draw a lot and stuff like that. Very few landscape painters actually work with color next to color. And I'm interested in those painters that do that. And they're my heroes. And like Winslow Homer said, he said, I can see a landscape painting that was painted outside versus a landscape painting that was painted in a studio in 10 seconds. And it's because of optically, it's so different what happens when the light's bouncing off of wall. It changes the way you see it. And it's very, very different. And I read that quote and I was like, you know what? I'm into this. I realized I can do this too. I can see it now. I can see where a painting has been painted, if it's been painted within four walls, or if it's been painted with a skylight, or if it's been painted outside. You can tell. It just takes a little training. He was into it. He studied this guy named Chevreul, who was an early color theorist, like a pre-Albers kind of, who he was a very early on sort of mapping out for people optics, how things worked, when why you would see one color looks like a totally different color next to another color kind of thing. And that was, he was actually in the fabric business, but he became a very important person for artists. And that's where I'm at. I'm into those landscape guys that actually stood out there and did it. Van Gogh is one of my favorite artists. And I love Marsden Hartley, the American landscape painter, and Emily Carr. She was a Canadian landscape painter, also 20th century, kind of modern, early modernist. I love de Kooning. There's just endless. It's really a lot of people, actually, when you think about it. A lot of women artists have been influential to me. I love Lee Krasner's collage. And her, in general, I like her work.
Now, when you first came up here, there wasn't much in the way of the gallery scene yet, I guess, was there?
No, there wasn't.
So you've kind of watched that develop.
I think Carrie was here. Carrie Adad. That's the only gallery I remember seeing open when I was here. I knew John Davis from before because I had friends who showed with him when he had galleries in other places. So I had already, and now there's a whole bunch more. And now there's Bruce Bergman, BCB, where I show. I met Bruce about 5 years ago. And now there's all kinds of galleries in Catskill, too, and there's different,
The one you mentioned, the Thompson Giroux over in Chatham?
Yep, that's brand new. They just opened last summer, I think.
And it seems like a very nice gallery, too.
Very beautiful gallery, very nice people. And they're doing a lot of interesting stuff. They've had a lot of really interesting group shows. And like Bruce, they're willing to show both my abstract painting and my landscape painting, which is nice for me because I always feel that normally, especially gallerists, will gravitate towards one and then they kind of want to hide the other one from people so that people don't get confused thinking that I have two styles, which isn't really the...
The show you're having coming up, though, is just one style, is it?
Yeah, the show with Bruce is going to be landscapes. I showed my work on paper with him in 2009, and that was all work on paper. And that's just because I think it's time for me to show this nice group of landscape. It's been a few years, and I really feel like I've done the best ones of my life in the past 3 years.
Wow.
So I saved them and let them go out there together.
Now, when you did the works on paper with Bruce, were those quite large?
Yeah, some of them were large. Yeah. They go from those ones span a lot of different scales because I'll work small and then sometimes I'll do a small one. I'll think, oh my God, I have to do that big. And then I'll do a bigger version. And then sometimes I'll do something, I'll take four pieces of paper and I'll make one painting and then I'll realize, oh, I need more. And then I'll add on or I'll, kind of switch things around. The paper pieces kind of somehow they work together very well. I can put four of them in a row sometimes that I did completely separately and then start to see these connections because I'm doing very similar forms and shapes. It's just, it's the color that I change.
Now, what about the yoga side?
Yeah, the yoga side.
When did that begin?
Well, I moved up here. I hadn't really ever done any yoga at all. So I was in my early 30s when I first got here. But I had done some Tai Chi when I was pregnant with my son, and when my son was small, I did Tai Chi for the first time, and I really liked that. I loved that. I'm very influenced by the Asian painters, and I love the whole I'm very interested in all Asian art. I mean, the landscape, the first landscape painters of the world are those Chinese Taoist paintings. And then from there, just the calligraphy and the spontaneous line and the way that the beauty of it is just, it's my favorite art in the world in a way. Although I was always talking about the West until now, but let's face it, I like the Asian painters too. And then so I sort of said, oh, Tai Chi, and this is like my painting, and this can all kind of start to come together. But when I got here, I didn't find any place to do, and I had little, small child and trying to do everything, didn't find anything. And then gradually met Sandra Loring, who runs the Sadhana Studio in Hudson, down on Warren Street, and started going to her classes, because once you take one of her classes, it could literally change your life forever. She is an incredible human being. She's a Buddhist and a dancer and a yoga, great yoga teacher. And I started going to her studio, and then one spring I just said to her, do you think I'm good enough to do a teacher training? She was like, sure, come on. And I was like, so I didn't even really, it was not a big plan. I just did the teacher training. And then when I did the training, I realized, wow, now I can teach yoga. I'm a professional yoga teacher now. And I started doing it. And it took me a few years, like 2-3 years, when you're, since I got my yoga certification. And I've been teaching really steadily ever since. So now I feel like I'm getting pretty good at that. Maybe it's been about 10 years of doing yoga and 3 years of teaching yoga. It's pretty recent. And yeah, if you told me 10 years ago that I was going to be a yoga teacher, I would have said, what are you talking about? I don't even do yoga. But now I'm a yoga teacher. And now I really love teaching yoga.
There are various types of yoga.
Yes, there sure are. There's a lot of different types.
And what is your specialty?
Well, I, with Sandra and Raghunath, I trained and just a mixed. We learned a lot of different traditions. We learned a lot of yoga history, and we learned different traditions. She teaches what's called a vinyasa form, where you flow very quickly through the poses. You're doing a lot of moving and breathing and moving, and then I was introduced after my first training to yin yoga, which is a Taoist form, which is a very slow yoga where you work focusing on the joints and the ligament and the tendon as opposed to the muscle. So it's a totally different form. And I started to enjoy doing those long, deep stretch practices. And then I decided to go and train in yin. So I went to Omega for a couple of years, and I got a yin certification. And that brings everything back home to me, because it's a Taoist form, and that's the philosophy that I'm most attracted to in life. The Taoists were, again, I said that before, but they were the landscape painters. They were the people that contemplated nature as their philosophy of life. And that silent contemplation of nature is where they felt at most at one, whatever you want to call it, most connected to unity, divinity, whatever you want to call it. So I got, when I found that form, I really connected to that on every level. And now I teach yin, and I also teach basic yoga, just basic yoga, so that anybody of any level can do it. You don't have to be a really super strong, flexible person to take my classes. And basically anybody who comes into a yin yoga class, anybody of any age, anybody, anything, will feel better when they leave. Their lower back's going to feel better. Your hips are going to feel better. It's a great practice for the body, for the hips and low back in particular. So, yeah.
Your painting and yoga are sort of connected, right?
I mean, yes, it's all about getting balance in your life, right? My artwork is all about balance. I've always, you know, it's about seeing things and feeling the wholeness and feeling an experience of being all at once, you know, and yoga. Yoga does that because you come into your body, you center, you try to connect your body and your mind and your breath. And yin yoga in particular is a meditative practice. It's practically as much meditation as it is quote-unquote yoga postures. So all of these things, finding balance, finding a way to deal with life's challenges, fulfilling your life and helping you deal with what arises. You know, this is what yoga's about. It's what painting's been about for me too. I'm trying to figure out my life, and yoga helps you remain calm. One of the things that you learn as an artist and a yogi is to temper your, you know, reactive state of mind. And, you know, I'm a New Yorker, so we are very reactive people. I mean, we're talkers. We never shut up. It's like we're famous for what? Road rage. I mean, it's like people are scared to go into New York because of what they're, you know, how intense everybody's going to be. And I just grew up, like, fighting my way into everything. And every sentence I got out of my mouth at the dinner table was, like, between the five other people that were desperately trying to talk as much as me. And then I started to nurture through these yogic practices as well as my painting, just a quiet, a silence, letting other things come up, letting other things speak. I don't want my material to be crushed by my thinking ego mind. I don't want my painting to not have a life outside of the fact that I created it. I know that's kind of crazy, but it takes on its own life. The minute you stop, it's like, I don't even feel like I did that. I look at him like, wow, how did that happen? I didn't even do that. And then, you know, it's the same thing of just allowing space so that when stuff happens in life, you don't have to immediately have that knee-jerk reaction. And yoga trains you. It trains you to take a breath. It's very simple. Yin yoga in particular, it trains you to see what's happening, like Buddhist studies, like any study where you look a little bit more at your mind and let there be space before your immediate reaction. And, you know, it's within that space. That's the space where everything happens. If you don't have that space, then you're trapped. You're just trapped. So
you spend a fair amount of time in New York City?
Well, I have my family because my father, mother, and sisters both all live there, I should say. And I have long-term friends, you know, lifelong friends that are New Yorkers. So I do, but I don't spend that much time there. And I think in the beginning years, we would go back and forth more. I still worked part-time in the city for 7 years when I was up here. I would traveling back and forth quite a bit. And I had a lot of luck in that way, too. I was able to have a really good part-time job in the city that helped me get a lot of money, and I didn't have to really spend full time doing it. I worked for an eccentric art person for 10 years who was the executor of Andy Warhol's estate. So he was right in the middle of everything artistically in terms of the high-end art world in New York. And I worked for him on his personal art collection, and doing that, I had a lot of exposure to all kinds of different art, you know, of all kinds, both in the industry, the business side, and then also the museums, and then, you know, just lots of artists. And I didn't ever have to work full time, so that's just unusual right there. Most of my friends have had to work full-time, giving up their artwork for a number of years and trying to crawl back. I was always able to do a little. I was always able to have a couple of days where I could work. And when the going got really rough, I had a very good friend, also a painter, and he was the one who said to me, you know, an hour a week. You may think it's nothing, but if you really devotedly give an hour a week to your work, it'll end up being something. So when I had my children and I had two babies and I had a job and I had doing everything at once, I just kept that in mind. I was like, okay, but where's my hour? And if you really do it, you turn around and 6 months later you have a body of work. It's just... But you have to really want to keep it alive. It's like holding on for dear life. And then I felt like I was able to still develop, because emotionally and spiritually I was given so much because of having a family. It just makes, you know, it just becomes such a beautiful thing and so powerful. And then it gave me that extra little bit of energy. And I don't torture myself. I'm never one. I love life. Life is much more important to me than anything. I'm not a sufferer. I don't want to. I gave that up. And I had cancer. I've been through a lot. My husband had a stroke. We've been through serious stuff. So I do not in any way beat myself up. I don't even like to meditate if it hurts. I want to walk. I don't even believe in sitting there and trying to endure. The Taoists don't do that. That's a Zen thing, you know. That's a little bit more hardcore Japanese influence. But, you know, I want to live fully and have a little time to keep my artwork going.
Having that very solid training when you're young must have helped, though, don't you think?
Yes, I do. I think it was incredible. I mean, I sometimes, you know, I just can't believe it. And, you know, it wasn't something, it was there for everybody, but hardly anybody was really doing it. And then I realized I must have, you know, wanted to have that. I wanted to be an artist. And I remember clearly when I started to think, I'm going to be a painter, you know, when I grow up. I was still young enough to remember I'm going to be a painter when I'm an adult. So it wasn't coming on late. And I think those early years, especially with the drawing from life, was important. It becomes a part of you and then you don't have to think, which is, you know, a very, you know, I'm not conceptual. I don't want to think. I want to feel, I want to experience it. I don't want to think about it. If I start thinking, it's like, that's when things start going wrong. It's like what Andy Warhol says, when you have to start thinking too much and correcting everything, that's when everything goes down the tubes. I'm one of those artists where it has to happen organically, naturally, and all at once. And so it's like playing the piano. You got to get it in your fingers so that you can not read the music and this be free. And that's what I got from those early years, probably. But, and guess what? You can do it now. My husband, he had a stroke. I just threw that out. My husband had a stroke after the flood last year. His studio flooded really badly, and he had a really pretty strong stroke. And he's been coming back very well, a lot of it due to his drawing. Just he's been so devoted and committed to drawing, and now he's been going, which he has to do with his left hand now, by the way, because his right hand, he can't really control it at all yet. So he's been going and drawing in the Spotty Dog. He goes and sits and draws the people sitting at the bar. He's become like a regular at the Spotty. The bartenders all take care of him. When I first could leave him, when he first was out of the hospital, I was worried about where he could be. And sure enough, the guys at the Spotty, all those wonderful guys that work there, and women, I should say, just took care of him and let him stay there for hours drawing. And now he goes on Sunday to the Opera House and draws on Sundays from 10 to 1. They have life drawing there. And that's the whole community is like taking care of him, really helped us as a family of, you know, two artists getting kind of hit with this, you know, and the community's just been right there, like holding us up, letting us draw. It's been great.
Well, is there anything else we haven't covered that we should?
Oh, gosh. We could just, one more thing I would like to offer out to the world is that the Etsy, you know, the Etsy offices there, it's next to Musica. You go in, there's that beautiful old building that they've renovated now. Beautiful building. And they hired me to teach yoga for their staff.
Oh.
And I... and now the classes are open to the public. They're community classes, like donation classes. And everybody is welcome to come. They have big, huge, big open space, nice wood floors. And we have class on Tuesday morning at 9 o'clock and on Thursday evening at 6 o'clock. And the Etsy staff come, but also now anybody from the community is welcome to come.
To just show up.
If you have a yoga mat of your own, because we don't have spare mats, and just make a donation, and you can have community basic yoga with Sasha. So that's fun. I enjoy that. A lot of my classes now, it's three of my classes are community classes, half of my classes, so that a lot of people can get their yoga in without... too much of a hardship there. And that's really nice.
Well, it's been fun visiting.
Yeah, Richard, thank you so much for letting me come.
Thank you for coming.
That was the artist Sasha Chermayev. This is Stockhausen, also from 1960. The first 10 minutes of a longer piece called Kontakte, Kontakte.
Mm-hmm.